Our next speaker is myself, Bill Schirappa, Rutgers University, New Jersey Agricultural Experiment Station. I work as a extension agent and also teach on campus various agricultural subjects. My title is generally comparing soil carbon dioxide in high bush blueberry corm balsam, vaccinium corm balsam. New Jersey, as many of you mostly know, is the home, the birthplace of commercial blueberry production. Elizabeth White started that in the early 1900s with cultivars coming from the Pine Barrens in New Jersey. But after 100 years, our soils are getting depleted. And that's the basis of my discussion today. Soil health. There's very different ways to define it. It's very diverse components, and there's a lot of interaction. So this is a very preliminary start to try to tease apart some of those factors and see how they compare in different cultures of blueberry, whether it's conventional culture, organic culture, or the native soils where our blueberries started in the Pine Barrens of New Jersey. Currently, there's three pressing problems commercially. Declining yields. We have seen them go from over 20,000 pounds per acre to 15,000 pounds per acre to 10,000 pounds per acre. And then you decide to replant. And when you replant, things don't rebound like they used to. Why? This becomes a very costly decision, and you got to put your crop budget together to get a net income. So let's look at the soil health factor that we typically look at, the physical approach. Sand, silt, and clay, what's the drainage like? That's a key factor of how your plant's going to be healthy and survive, especially in the sun. Then there's the chemical approach, which we all stress that importance of pH, 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 so important, as well as the fertility of NPK and the micronutrients. We do these things very, very well for decades. What we don't do so well is look at the biology of the soil. We don't look at improving plant health so much by feeding the soil. We think we can bypass that by feeding it with synthetic materials or natural materials. But in improving plant health, especially in the organic philosophy or the sustainable philosophy, we do start commercially, conventionally, with peat moss. That's a good start for an amendment. Now there's biostimulants, organic fertilizers, humus, other carbon sources, and cover crops serve as a compost too. Feed the microbiome of the soil. And mycorrhizal fungi are some of the key contributors to good soil health. There's a lot more than that, though. There's hundreds of them. I'd say probably the key five, besides mycorrhiza, which increases root feeding surface and nutrient uptake, the cyanobacteria photosynthesize nitrogen. The azobacter feeds on plant exudates and carbon sources to fix nitrogen. There's phosphate-dissolving bacteria. And one of my favorite, the actinomycetes that generate pathogen-fighting antibiotics. Some of you may know that fresh meat, sweet smell in soil. That's the smell of actinomycetes working. That's the smell they give off, and that's what led to Rutgers scientists like Selman Waksman to discover antibiotics in the soils of New Jersey. And that leads to a whole food chain, that what they do is they break down organic sources that are in the soil, and you have the initial decomposers, some of the shredders that lead to higher trophic levels, whether it's orbatid mites, earthworms, ants, and on and on. And these are all helping convert organic substances into plant-assimilatable nitrogen. This is something that we do not estimate. We don't know what's going on in the soil, and we don't give credit for it in our soil tests. Our soil tests just are based on plant need. How many kilograms of a hectare do you want to give to that blueberry plant? So our basic research goals are pretty broad in assessing blueberry farm soil health. And basically I'm talking about the short-term goals of this project, not the long-term. Just to assess the chemical, physical, and biological status of these long-term blueberry fields. And look at the different berryland soils that we have, Some are downer soil, some are ATCO, some are Hamilton, some are even sassafras, but we all call them berryland soils because blueberries grow real well in these basically low pH soils. And we're going to see how the carbon changes, fluxes during the season in these soils. Previously, this hasn't been done because it's really hard. It's really expensive. But now there's a relatively inexpensive and simple test that you can do. It's called the Solvita soil test system, and it measures soil respiration by how much carbon dioxide is coming out of a unit of soil. Basically, the soil is dried down, so the microbes go dormant. And then after they've gone dormant, no carbon dioxide comes off because they're not working, they're dormant. But then you give them back a little water, they refresh, they start working on whatever organic matter is there, and they respire and give off CO2. By measuring that CO2, you can get an estimate of the biomass of that bacteria and fungi population there. And then you can either see how many pounds per acre that they can convert from organic matter. Basically, there's a scale from 0 to 5. It's a color scale. If you have very low soil activity, you're getting less than 15 pounds of naturally produced nitrogen per acre. If you're in the medium soil activity, you can get 25 to 45 pounds of naturally derived nitrogen and up and up. I'll show you a little more details on this Solvita scale later. It also relates to the ppm range of carbon dioxide. If it's low carbon dioxide, 0 to 5, you can see it's low soil fertility. If it's medium soil fertility, you're getting 13 to 30 ppm range. And if it's really high, 71 to 160, in which case that could be calculated to 75 pounds of free nitrogen per acre. So you go out and you sample with your standard soil probe, 6 to 8 inches in the ground, 8 subsamples per acre, and mix them all in a bag, and take out a pint sample for the lab to estimate your natural nitrogen, not your synthetic nitrogen. Once it's back in the lab, we dry it. We weigh 40 grams of the material. And move on to the next steps. Now we put that 40 grams in a beaker. The container of soil has holes in the bottom, and then we put water, 25 mils of water, distilled water, in the bottom, and that, by capillary action, wets the soil. So the bacteria or fungi or any living creature that's gone dormant then is revived. They start respiring again. They give off CO2. And that's, we give them 24 hours in a container at 20 degrees centigrade. Inside now that beaker is a gel reactive card. This card changes color. It's very similar, if you're familiar with the Cornell soil test that we use a lot of times. There's a color chart. You can see what the pH of the soil. This also changes color and tells you the amount of carbon being released. Now, I'm not too good with that Cornell chart either with colors, but you can do that. And on the other hand, I spent $800 for this little mini color card reader, and you stick that little gel into the bottom of this, and you can read the amount of carbon dioxide that's coming off in ppm, or convert it to a simple-to-use 0 to 5 scale. It's just a little more costly. But after 1,000 samples that I've done with this machine, it's already paid itself off, especially in time and effort and accuracy. A preliminary result I found was that I looked at 25 different types of farms, several hundred different soil samples, winter, spring, summer, and fall, and basically golf courses like on the tees and greens are very, this is a ppm of carbon dioxide. It shows you how healthy the bacterial community and fungi community is. They were very low. annual crops like vegetables that have a lot of tillage, a lot of synthetic pesticides in the ground that kill fungus, and there's that thing. That wasn't much higher. Golf fairways were a little bit better. Sod farms, home lawns were a bit better. Bioenergy crops like miscanthus was better because that was had no tillage. But by far the highest, the thing that really stuck out, was organic blueberries. They pretty much doubled and tripled the amount of carbon dioxide that was coming off from the soil. In this particular case, in one field, one farm, 50-acre organic farm, spring, summer, and fall, they were all very high values compared to standard conventional fields, which were very low. Additionally, in this study, we conducted a transect of the sandy coastline where blueberries grow best of new farms, new just starting off farms, and we conducted a study of just in the Pine Barrens, native forests that were right next to a conventional blueberry field. So they have the same soils, but one's been cultivated for 50 or 100 years with blueberries, and the other has just had wild blueberries grow there. And the initial results were that if you are a standard old farm, your CO2 that related to how healthy your soil was with life was very low. Significantly higher was that of medium organic farms. And then, by far the highest, was some new farms that were just starting out. And their pH was higher as well. So a big difference in the soil life. Here's a chart that compares the Pine Barren forest soils from the organic blueberry blocks to the conventional blueberry blocks. And it's not easy to visualize, but there were significant differences in several categories. One was not the lime requirement. That shows you that these soils were all pretty much the same, whether they're conventional or native or far. These box and whiskers are not significantly different, so it wasn't a matter of lime being able to change the pH of the soil. What was significant was the color rating that we got on this Solvita color scale. Conventional blueberries were always barely over 1. Native forest was always ranging from 2.5 to 4.5, and similarly for the organic blueberry fields. Their soils were similar in color. What did that mean? Well, it mostly meant the organic matter was more. The conventional blueberry soils that probably used to be 5 or 7% are now only 2%, 2.5% at the most. The native forest is generally higher, but generally it's 4%, 5%. What was really striking was the organic blueberry farms, which are closer to 5% on average. So they're feeding the soil with organic materials that show up in this rating. And what did the pH look like? Well, in this first round, the pH of the conventional blueberries was always averaging about 3.8. Subsequent to this, after this chart, I looked at another 50 blueberry fields that were much worse. They averaged about 3.1, way too acidic for things to survive. I think being this message that blueberries are an acid-loving plant has gone too far. We actually got to go in the other way. Whereas the native forest, the pH generally ranges 4.5 to 5.5. In the organic blueberries, which was surprising, they're up at over 5, 5.5. So soil acidity was very different, and yet the berries were pretty healthy. So what's some basic recommendations we can take at this point on this preliminary survey study? I think we've got to apply more soil compost in these fields that are starting to see declining yields, more bark and sawdust and straw and pine needles. Start to build up and feed that soil and bring these microbes and the soil food web back to life. It needs to be well composted. You can't just put raw chips in there because that'll actually rob the nitrogen for a few years. But we got to build that soil. With those low pH fields, we have now looked at well over 100 commercial blueberry farms in New Jersey, and probably 30 or 40 of them are about 3.0 to 3.5. It's toxic. It's caustic. The stuff is sterile. And so we have to maybe apply lime. This is like heresy to start thinking we should put lime in blueberries. We never do that, but now's the time to probably do it. Some of the problem is these salty fertilizers. That kills life. Salt is one of the more toxic substances. There are alternatives of fertilizer that don't have too much salt in them, so I think we've got to look at those formulations. We've got to watch the soil. Pesticides, putting fungicides and insecticides in the soil kill the soil life. And there goes the soil food web system and the free nitrogen we get from the soil that our forefathers used to get back in the day. Finally, stop tilling so much, killing all the roots, turning up the soil, burning up the organic matter. Fescue grass walkways may be a solution, and some of my earlier studies have shown that to be very good. Next steps after this, where is that carbon dioxide coming from? Well, when, you know, when plants taking carbon dioxide and producing oxygen for us all, we always say, oh, the oxygen is in the air, the carbon dioxide's in the air. Where's the carbon dioxide come? Being we're in Hawaii, volcanoes are the culprit of all this CO2. Not the factories, not the farms, not the air. I'm suggesting that the soil is a really big contributor to carbon dioxide. And this is what helps keep plants healthy. They take in that carbon dioxide, mix it with water, and bam, we have plant sugars and food and give out oxygen. I'm always intrigued when I look at the stoma of a plant. They're always facing downward. If they were getting the carbon dioxide from the air, wouldn't they want to like face where the wind is? So this study was recently done in Nebraska on corn. And in corn, they found out the majority of carbon dioxide for healthy corn came from the soil because wind is bringing the CO2 from the air right across. I think the structure of blueberries may be similar and something we've got to look about for the future. So that's my hypothesis. I'd like to thank our Blueberry Working Group at Rutgers, Dean Polk, Gary Pavlis, Peter Rudemans, and Carol Mansu, and my little team of our soil director, Stephanie Murphy, my program associates, Vivian Quim, Rebecca Barisi, and our small fruit specialist, Dan Ward. I'd like to thank the American Society of Horticultural Science. We're still working on the yin and yang of blueberry production, and I see so many changes in this session that's going on. It's great that we're moving forward, and my time is up, and I'd like to end right there. I'll take questions at the end. We'll move to our next speaker, David Percival.